Your Excellency Bishop Witold Murzynski, Your Excellency Consul General Maciej Golubiewski, dear distinguished guests, dear brothers and sisters, please forgive my butchering of such a beautiful language. My name is Father Roger Landry, and it's a joy with me to share with you this celebration of the upcoming third anniversary of the canonization of St. John Paul II. It's a personal celebration for me, because St. John Paul II was not just a hero in my life whose writings and whose witness influenced my priestly vocation, but because he was someone I had the privilege to get to know. I met St. John Paul II and had the chance to chat with him 11 different times during my days as a seminarian in Rome and after. I knew him well enough to be recognized by him and earn a nickname, Gemello Americano, he used to call me, the American twin, from the fact that the first time I met him was in 1995 with my identical twin brother, who was likewise a seminarian in Rome with me. It was 1995, and we were both dressed in full-length black cassocks with identical glass frames and identical haircuts at the time that we were both still with hair. When he greeted the two of us in his study after we had attended his daily mass, he said to us in Italian, "Siete veramente gemelli, you guys really are twins." And then he asked us a question. "Giocate con il vostro rettore? Do you play games on your rector?" Our rector at the time was Monsignor Timothy Dolan, who now occupies this cathedra in the sanctuary. Because the Holy Father was constantly looking back and forth, trying to find any difference between my identical twin and me, because he was the successor of St. Peter, and therefore you couldn't fib even in the least, Scott and I, at exactly the same time, with exactly the same word, with exactly the same pitch, we blurted out, "Sempre," in stereo, saying we're always playing tricks on the future Cardinal Dolan. When we said that, he and Monsignor Jeevish, his secretary, and all those who were present in his study started to laugh together that identical twins were actually thinking and speaking exactly the same way. When we turned around to the Holy Father, he was in a full-scale guffaw, bent over. He got on up, still howling, slapped us both on the sides of the face, and he said, "Bravi Americani, you Americans are great." And with his extraordinary capacity to remember the people he met, he referred to me from that point forward as the American twin. I had a chance thereafter to serve his Mass at St. Peter's, to read during the Easter Vigil, to proclaim the Gospel to him at his private chapel, to get his advice about the apostolate I was returning to Massachusetts to carry out with young people, to have him grasp my hand and say a sincere grazie, thanks, when I told him I was hoping to spend the rest of my life popularizing his teachings on human love and the divine plan. I had the chance to have him bless my parents on their 30th wedding anniversary, and then turn to me somewhat mischievously and say, after my priestly ordination, "And now a blessing for the other father of the family." And finally, in a mysterious gesture, to have him place his hands on me in St. Peter's Square 7 months before God would call him home. I was leading a pilgrimage, and he permitted us to meet him after a general audience. And after I introduced the members of my group and we huddled around his chair for a photo, I got down on a knee a couple persons away. And as the cameras were snapping, I felt somebody's hand on my head. And I thought it was probably one of the members of my group who considered it appropriate, when you're having photos with the 264th Peter, to be playing games with the chaplain. But when I turned around after the photos were finished, I noticed that the hand was attached to a white cassock, and that, as the photo showed, 7 months prior to his death, he was full of Parkinson's disease. And what he needed to do in order to do that was to lean over his chair in such a way that it was much more difficult for any of us. And so, surprised, I got up and I said, "Cosa significato quello, Santità? What did that mean, Holy Father?" And he said mysteriously, "Un giorno lo saprai. One day you'll know." I thought it might have been an attempt at a miracle to raise my dead follicles to life again. But whatever it meant, whether playful or meaningful, I treasure it. And I like to think that from heaven, St. John Paul II continues to stretch out his hand to bless not only me, but all of us with every spiritual blessing in the heavens. St. John Paul II has continued to play a major role, not just in my thinking, but also in my priestly work. I'll share just one example. In 2008, when I was a pastor in New Bedford, Massachusetts, one of my parishioners, his name was José Amaral, a Portuguese immigrant who hadn't walked for 28 years, prayed in the confessional there to St. John Paul II to be healed. And he was healed. And he walked out of the church after not having walked for 3 decades, something that was among the 251 miracles submitted prior to St. John Paul II's beatification. I've been asked by the Consul General today to reflect with you upon one of the great contributions of St. John Paul II to the church and the world, which is about the dignity and the meaning of human work. Something that doesn't get enough attention in the way that we approach our life and the way Catholics approach the faith. Most of us will spend at least 25% of our week, from the time we're teens or young adults to the time we're 65 or older, doing some form of work. Cumulatively, the only activity to which we will dedicate more time is sleeping. For many, work is toilsome, a hardship, a means not so much of fulfillment, but of survival. The means by which one seeks to provide for himself and those who depend on him in the present and in the future. In Western societies today, many treat work, especially when it's tedious or monotonous, as something we have to endure until we arrive at the magical age when we can enjoy a second childhood, relax at the pool, play golf, volunteer, or do whatever we want to do or don't want to do. In the communist context in which St. Karol Wojtyla labored as a young priest and bishop, the meaning of work was being conceptually distorted. The erroneous understanding of work flowed, he said, from a faulty anthropology in communism, a faulty understanding of who the human person is. And so he dedicated himself to trying to live and impart to his contemporaries during those troubling times an appropriate approach to work. This wasn't a new effort. It wasn't original on his part. Cardinal Stefan Wyszyński, the primate of Poland, from the time of John Paul II's priestly ordination in 1945, to the week after Mehmed Aliaka tried to assassinate St. John Paul II in 1981. Cardinal Wyszyński, throughout that entire tenure, had tried to form the Polish people with a proper understanding of work, describing in his homilies, as well as a book called All You Who Labor, Work and Sanctification of Daily Life, how work, from the work of housewives to taxi drivers to manual laborers to professors and doctors, were all important to society, to the church, to God. He taught that human work is a collaboration, a cooperation, a working together with the first worker, God Himself, an activity that brings one closer to God's work of creation. It's something that's meant to increase our love when we work for God and others. It's when we work in that way that he said, love and work meet. Work is not simply part of one's life, he stressed, but is rather an integrating key for life. Work helps us to get outside of ourselves. He added that when work is difficult, it's an opportunity for us to share in the redeeming work that Christ carried out in the most difficult way on Calvary, for ourselves and for others. The daily toil of work is not hopeless, he taught, because it can become the medicine for our corrupted nature, and the sweat of our face can become the atonement for our revolt and the sins of others. These are thoughts that eventually Pope John Paul II himself would develop at length. From Cardinal Wyszyński, the future Pope also learned about the importance of accompanying people pastorally in their work. Cardinal Wyszyński supported the Solidarity Movement, as well known, perhaps most famously, in the appointment of Blessed Jerzy Popiełuszko to accompany the striking workers of Warsaw. In the homilies that would eventually be broadcast far and wide and lead to Blessed Jerzy's being kidnapped, savagely beaten, and drowned in a reservoir, he likewise accentuated the meaning and the importance of human work. No matter what job you said, Blessed Jerzy articulated, retain your dignity because you're a human being, because work is for man and not man for work. Just as the full truth about the human person demands that we not be for the system, but the system be for us. These were lessons the future St. Karol Wojtyła would not just study and write about, but live. For 4 years during the Nazi occupation of Krakow, when he was a clandestine seminarian, he had to work for the Solvay chemical factory. The first year, he had to work from 6 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon in sub-zero temperatures, doing the back-breaking work of breaking up limestone and then packing it into small railway cars. Eventually, he was able to get transferred to the chemical plant of the Solvay company in Borek-Faleski, where during the nighttime shift, he would carry buckets of lime over his shoulders while trying to squeeze in time to pray and study philosophy and theology. It was a work that could have crushed him, but through the virtue of many of his co-workers and his own integration of what he was doing during those lengthy nights in prayer, it opened him to the transcendent that Cardinal Wyszyński had been describing. 15 years after that experience, writing poetry under a pseudonym, André Javien, he would comment, "Listen, even the knocking of hammers, so much their own, I project onto the people to test the strength of each below. Listen now, electric current cuts through a river of rock, and a thought grows in me day after day. The greatness of work is inside man." That the greatness of work was not being a cog in the Nazi war machine needing limestone. The greatness of work will never be found in a salary, however great. The greatness of work will not merely be in those you help directly through your work. He said the greatness of work is found inside, in the way that we form ourselves through our working. That's the key to St. John Paul II's philosophical and theological writings on the importance of human work. His major project throughout all his academic and pastoral life, which is one of the greatest of anyone who's ever ascended to the throne of Peter, he said the purpose behind it all was to provide an adequate anthropology for the crises and the questions of our day. The chief problem, he thought, of Nazism and communism, of so many other ideologies, of so many erroneous philosophies and theology, was that they had a flawed conception of who the human being is. And if that fundamental premise is off, every conclusion based on it will likewise err. In the pinnacle of his philosophical work, which was called Person and Act, he sought to overcome the anthropological confusions that came from the 13th century nominalists, the 16th century Descartes, the 19th century Kant, the skeptics, the positivists, the phenomenologists up to his day. He sought, through a phenomenological personalism, studying other persons with a special method of observation, to create an adequate bridge from who we are as human subjects to the objective work in which both man and woman is an object and a subject. The way we come to know ourselves, he said, is the way we unite our understanding of the human person, how we know what we know, and what the good is in human action. Anthropology, epistemology, and ethics through our free actions and our reflection upon those free actions. We get to know the person by means of our deliberate activity. Therefore, our work, both individually and in participation with others' work, is the means by which we grow as persons and grow to know ourselves. It's the means by which we not only make something, but make ourselves better or worse. It not only flows from who we are, but helps us discover more deeply who we are and forge through the use of our freedom our particular character. Person and work is therefore a crucial part of the Yesoba Ishem which was the title of this work, Person and Act. St. John Paul II continued the work of finding an adequate anthropology when he was elected the 264th Peter on October 16, 1978. He now was in a position to substitute theological categories for his former philosophical ones, but the project was still the same, to help everyone figure out who we really are and who God is calling us to become. The means he chose was to provide a continuous commentary and application in many different ways on two famous passages from the Second Vatican Council's Pastoral Constitution on the Church in the Modern World, called Gaudium et Spes, Joy and Hope, that he had helped to author. Two central insights in that document are that if we really want to find out who it is to be human, we need to look to Jesus Christ, who was 100% and perfect human. And when he took on our humanity, purified our humanity, and made us capable through our humanity of sharing his divinity. So if we want to understand who we are, first we got to look to Jesus. And the second insight was, if we want to have it all, if we want to find fulfillment as human beings, it'll come not through self-affirmation, but he said through self-sacrifice, through self-giving. That the human person will only find himself through the unselfish giving of himself to others. It's by imitating Jesus and loving others as he has loved us first, giving ourselves for God and others, according to the example we see in the one who loved us with the greatest love and laid down his life for us. That's the secret of unlocking the riddle of the human person. That was the chief insight he sought to develop during his 26 years and 7 months as Pope. In a 1994 book-length interview called Crossing the Threshold of Hope, he sketched out what his papacy was all about. He said he wrote his first major teaching document, Christ the Redeemer of Man, a few months after his election, because that document summarized all he was hoping to do as the Holy Father of Catholics. He said, I was carrying the contents of that document within me as I was elected. I had only to copy from memory and experience what I had already lived on the threshold of the papacy. And he described what those contents that he copied from his memory were in that encyclical letter. He said, the person who wishes to understand himself thoroughly, and not just in accordance with immediate, partial, often superficial, even illusory standards and measures of his being, he must, with all his unrest, his uncertainty, even his weakness and sinfulness, with his life and with his death, draw near to Christ. He must, so to speak, enter into Christ with his whole self. He must appropriate and assimilate the whole of the reality of Jesus coming into our world and Jesus dying and rising again in order to find himself. The way of the Church, he said, was to draw close simultaneously to man at the same time that we were helping man draw close to Jesus. Because Jesus, John Paul II asserted, is and has the answer to the deepest questions any human being will ever have. John Paul II's ideas about human work flow from his ideas about the human person, and the methodology is the same. To turn to Jesus as a worker, because it is Jesus who fully reveals the human person to himself. Then to follow Jesus in putting into practice the lessons we see in him as he works. And then to help others learn how to find similar fulfillment in the work that constitutes such a huge part of human life. Where did he give us all this teaching? It was in a beautiful 1981 encyclical letter on human work, called in Latin, Laborum Exercens. And John Paul II sought to place the work we do within the context of God's creation and redemption. You'll hear strong echoes of Cardinal Wyszynski, which we already mentioned. From the beginning, John Paul II said, the human person, even before the fall, is called to work. Work is one of the characteristics that distinguishes the human person from the rest of creatures. This work bears a particular mark of man and of humanity, the mark of a person operating within a communion of persons. And this mark, in a sense, constitutes the person's very nature. Work isn't just something we do on the side. Work is central to who God created us to be. St. John Paul II described what we are supposed to read in the book of Genesis. Before the fall, God commanded the human person to be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth and subdue it, to have dominion over all living creatures, and to subdue the earth. After original sin, this threefold work became hard. There were pangs in the work of childbirth. Work in the fields was toilsome and sweaty, and humans' dominion over the earth became arduous and sometimes even dangerous. Nevertheless, John Paul II says, the vocation, the calling to work, remains a means of our redemption, because in working for others, we overcome the effects of the fall, substituting for selfishness, self-giving, sacrificial love. God gave us the vocation to work, John Paul II said, so that we could be more like Him who worked in creating the world. And as Jesus said in the Gospel, is still working. Work, and this is an essential point in His thought, not only produces something, but it perfects us by bringing out our potential. We see this, for example, in the study that forms our brain, in the labor that forms our muscles, in the caring for children or others that forms our heart. The great 4th century doctor of the church, St. Gregory of Nyssa, once said that through our work, we become, in a sense, our own parents. In other words, work forms our character, for better or worse. We father or mother ourselves by working hard, or poorly by slacking off. In John Paul II's terminology, he describes the transitive and the intransitive impact of our work. Through the transitive work, we form the earth. We make something outside of ourselves. But through the intransitive, we transform our personality and forge our humanity. We exercise dominion not only over the earth and the animals, but even over ourselves. And this, he insisted, was what gave work its deepest dignity and value. Work, he stressed, is for man, not man for work. And in the final analysis, it's always man who is the purpose of work, not what man and woman produce. And that's the reason why the working person can never therefore be treated just as a tool or a piece of merchandise, either in communist or capitalist systems. He must always be regarded as a person with dignity and creativity, even in his work. To ground this beautiful theology of work, John Paul II turns to Jesus. According to the principles of the theological anthropology we discussed a little earlier, Jesus shows who the human being is, even working. Let's face it, Jesus spent the vast majority of his time on earth not preaching, but working as a craftsman. Tekton in Greek means more than a carpenter. It means a construction worker, somebody who builds things, even with other substances than wood. He built houses. He made tables and wheels. He produced other needed items. Jesus didn't enter the world of human work as a cover until the real work of preaching, teaching, healing, dying, and rising would commence. Rather, Jesus worked in order to redeem human work in the process of redeeming the human person in his or her entirety. So great was Jesus' appreciation for the role of human work in the divine plan that he often used it as an analogy for his work in establishing his kingdom. He favorably mentioned shepherds, farmers, doctors, sowers, householders, servants, stewards, merchants, laborers, soldiers, crooks, tax collectors, and scholars. He compares the work of sharing the gospel to the manual work of harvesters and fishermen. He calls each of us to be laborers in his vineyard. And he says that at the end of our life, he wants to be able to say to each of us, "Well done, good and faithful servant." John Paul II outlines in Laborum Exercens a spirituality of the workplace, a gospel of work, showing that work is not just about a paycheck, but about loving and serving God and others. One's desk, sewing machine, keyboard, classroom, kitchen, workbench, operating room, field, or boat can become an altar on which we can offer ourselves, together with the work we do, to God and for others. And our work, even our hardest work, when it's done out of love, transforms whatever inner disorder remains in us from the fall and unites us to Christ's saving work. Sweat and toil, he wrote, present the Christian and everyone who's called to follow Christ with the possibility of sharing lovingly in the work Christ came to do. The work of salvation came about through his suffering and death on a cross. By enduring the toil of work in union with Christ crucified, the human person, in a way, collaborates with the Son of God for the redemption of humanity. This is the deepest meaning of all our work. A saint to whom St. John Paul II had a great devotion, and whom he had the joy of beatifying and canonizing, was St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe. He understood and lived this gospel of work as a student, a young Franciscan friar, a newspaper publisher, a founder of the largest monastery in the world in Neapakalana, a missionary to Japan, and finally, after his public opposition to the Nazis, a laborer in Auschwitz, which showed in the extreme not only his character, but illustrated the meaning of human work and how it's meant to participate in God's work. How ironic, when he entered into Auschwitz, he would have seen that sign with the Nazis mockingly put up over the entrance. Arbeit macht frei. Work makes you free. Of course, the work of those sent to Auschwitz wouldn't result in their earthly liberation from the Nazis. But in a deeper sense, our work, when united to love and done in truth, is indeed meant to liberate us. And that's what we saw in the work of St. Maximilian. He was assigned to hard labor, carrying heavy stones, cutting and carrying tree trunks and corpses. The sadistic SS guards would force them to work all day without a stop and beat them if they weren't running carrying those weighty stumps. Despite having only 20% lung capacity, having lost the rest to tuberculosis, the 47-year-old Maximilian Mary did work for the glory of God and the redemption of those in the camp. He would say to those who asked him about how he could do it, even taking the beatings of guards when physically he collapsed, "Don't worry about me or my health, for the good Lord is everywhere, holds each of us in his great love and is helping me." He was a living illustration of the saying from the 19th century Polish poet Cyprian Norwid, whose thought deeply influenced St. John Paul II's. Work accepted with love is the highest manifestation of human freedom. His Arbeit, accepted with love, was making him free even as he bore the tattoo 16690. And we know how his work of redemption culminated. On July 31st, after one prisoner had seemingly escaped, and 10 were being selected to die in the starvation bunker in retaliation, Franciszek Jawniczek, a 31-year-old husband and dad, was selected to die, and he blurted out, "My wife, my children." That's when Kolbe stepped forward, introduced himself as a priest from Poland, and said, "I want to die for that man." An offer the stunned German guard accepted. And he kept working until the end, preparing the other 9 for death, getting himself likewise ready. When after 2 weeks of starvation he still hadn't died, he was injected with carbolic acid. For St. John Paul II, St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe had looked to Christ, who fully revealed the Franciscan supreme vocation, and Kolbe found himself, through the totally unselfish gift of himself for Franciszek and others, entering into Christ's greatest work because he was entering into Christ's greatest love. And John Paul II likewise continued to work until the end. When people, seeing the ravages that Parkinson's disease was doing on this formerly vigorous athlete, actor, and pastor, and they asked him whether he would consider resigning, he heroically said, "Christ didn't come down from the cross." who's going to entrust his whole work, like he did his life, to the Father, who would know his time and call him when his work was done. And while his transitive works and travels diminished off his previously record-setting pace, the intransitive work within him intensified until the very end. Please permit me to finish with two brief thoughts. In the 1956 book of poetry from which I already quoted, The Place Within, the future saint compared the intransitive work to the building of a cathedral. That as we're making something on the outside, with God's help, we're building something great like a cathedral on the inside. He wrote, "No, not just hands drooping with the hammer's weight, not the taut torso, muscle shaping your own style, but thought informing his work, deep knotted in the wrinkles of his brow and over his head, joined in a sharp arc, shoulders and veins vaulted. So for a moment, he is a Gothic building cut by a vertical thought born in the eyes. No, not a profile alone, not a mere figure between God and stone, but one sentenced to grandeur and error." That interior work of building an inner cathedral will never be perfect in this life. There'll always be errors, but it's still called to grandeur. And when St. John Paul II came here to this Cathedral of St. Patrick for the first time as Pope on October 2nd, 1979, he called us to look around at the beauty of this cathedral and imitate and embody in our work what inspiringly we see here in this glorious edifice, that we're supposed to come through our work on the inside something like we behold here. And we might like St. Patrick's need a renovation project, but it's time to get going. St. John Paul II said in 1979 here, "May the spires of St. Patrick's Cathedral always reflect the thrust with which the Church fulfills her fundamental function in every age, to direct man's gaze, to point the awareness and experience of the whole of humanity upward toward the mystery of God, to help all men and women to be familiar with the profundity of the redemption taking place in Jesus. This, too, is included in the symbolism of St. Patrick's, the expression of our vital and distinctive service to humanity. It's to direct hearts to God, to keep alive hope in this world. And so we repeat with St. Paul in his first letter to St. Timothy, this explains why we work and struggle as we do, because our hopes are fixed on the living God." John Paul II here was calling all of us to work like this. And how happy he would be from the Father's house that would come together tonight in celebration of his upcoming third anniversary to enter into the work which is the center of his life, the work of the liturgy, and let that liturgy overflow as we follow Christ in saying to those we meet, "This is my body, this is my blood, this is my sweat, these are my calluses, these are my tears, given out of love for you." This is the secret of St. John Paul II's work. It explains why he worked as he did and how he hopes we will work, so that we will all one day come to meet him in the place to which the cathedrals, the spires of this St. Patrick's Cathedral point. Praise be Jesus Christ.